Hello and welcome to the Deep Track Podcast, an exploration of watches, trends, and culture with a few adventures along the way. I'm your host, Blake Bettner. This week, I'm thrilled to welcome chef and restaurateur Anton Deyrit to the podcast. Anton is the chef of New York's Tradition restaurant located in Hell's Kitchen, known for their authentic and approachable Filipino comfort food. Chef Anton is also a huge watch guy, with a penchant for vintage sport watches, vintage dive watches in particular. So naturally, we have a lot of overlapping interests, and we have plenty to talk about here. Anton opened his restaurant just before lockdown in 2020, so we talk about that experience and how he's been able to come through with one of New York's favorite Filipino restaurants. We also talk about what makes Filipino food so special, including adobo, and what makes it so personal. I met Anton just a couple of weeks ago at his restaurant during a watch collector meetup in which he closed down the restaurant graciously for us and served a veritable feast of traditional Filipino food. So we talk a little bit about that as well before we get into nerding out on vintage dive watches. There's a little bit of everything here. A huge thank you to Anton for giving me a bit of his time to chat with him. If you are in New York, I highly encourage you to go and check out Tradition Restaurant. It is just incredible experience, and be sure to ask Anton what he's wearing. I think you'll find that you make a fast friend in him talking about food and watches. Anton has an incredible knowledge of the watches that he's into, and really a singular focus on what keeps him motivated in this hobby. So really inspiring discussion here, and I'll leave it at that. And now here's my discussion with Chef Anton Deyrit. Hi, Anton Deyrit. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. I appreciate your time, man. It's good to see you.
Of course, man. Of course. You too, man. It was great to finally meet you a couple weeks ago in the restaurant, man. It was a pleasure to talk to watches and have you guys in my restaurant.
Yeah, that was a great time. We were at your restaurant, and you can correct me if I'm pronouncing this incorrectly. Tradition?
Tradition, yes.
Tradition, okay, which is a Filipino restaurant. Yeah. And we had a really incredible meal at this place with a few other fellow watch collectors here in New York. You graciously closed down the restaurant, and it was a veritable feast that you laid out in front of us. And I had no idea what to expect here. Jane invited me, and I thought it'd be just a normal, typical restaurant experience. But boy, it was so much more than that. It was a very personal experience. There was no plates. It was, I think, banana leaves.
Banana leaves, correct? Yes.
On the table, yes. And then it was a little bit of everything, it seemed like. Is that a traditional thing that you make often at the restaurant?
Yes. So a Kamayan feast, basically Kamayan means hands, so you use your hands to eat. The history of the Kamayan feast goes back to when the rangers, when they're in the jungle, they had no plates, so they used banana leaves, and they just put, cook a bunch of their food and lay the banana leaf in the middle, and they all share the meal communally. So that's origination. That's where it all originated from. And throughout the years, chefs and other culinary scholars, they actually elevated that meal, that whole feast, for the general public. Yeah.
Very cool. It was really incredible experience. Yeah. So for people who aren't familiar, Anton, maybe give yourself just a quick intro. Tell us who you are. You're also a big watch guy, which of course we'll get into a little bit as well. But give us just a brief intro a little bit, and then we'll talk some more food and some more watches.
Sure. So my name is Anton Deyrit. I'm a chef in New York. I have a couple of Filipino restaurants in New York called Tradition. I came to New York when I was 27 years old. Wow, it was a long time ago. That's already about 16 years ago. I'm 44 now. To become a chef, and went through all I would say like the high end restaurants to get my training in, and went through Don John George, Burakan, Tabla when it was open before Mission Chinese. What else did I go to? ABC Kitchen. I was there for a while. ABC Kitchen, ABC Cocina, ABC B. So yeah, and then after that, I did my own thing since 2016, and I've been collecting watches. Hard collecting. I would say I only started about 2014. But I've always had a connection to watches. Always, ever since, like when I was young, because my brothers, my father, they all love watches. So yeah, so yeah. So I basically only started collecting when I started having a little bit of money.
Sure, sure. Not an uncommon thing, I'm sure. So your restaurant that you started, Tradition, as I understand, was March of 2020.
We opened a week before lockdown.
So tell me about that, what that was like. And of course, you're still here. Spoiler alert. The restaurant's still there and going strong. What was that like? Do you think that it's made you a better chef, a better person? Going through that.
Obviously, it was just it was bad timing, obviously. But like it, we had no choice. We had no choice. So basically, we opened a week before lockdown. We did a soft opening. We had to shut down for like to we had to shut down for like a week and a half, and then I was like, fuck it, whatever, let's open up anyway. We have nothing to lose. We're a startup. We're a startup. We're a startup. We're a new restaurant. Let's do it. So what we did first was to get our name out there was to was we fed the frontliners. So we got our name out there through that. And then we basically, to be honest with you, like in the beginning, we were so slow. We were all the restaurant was just me, my business partner, and my other sous chef was just me, and it's three of us in the restaurant, like basically, like just sitting around doing nothing, and like we were actually doing like $400 a day. And I was like, oh my God, dude, this is like whenever you reach the 600 mark, like, yes, let's celebrate. So stupid. But yeah, and then everything started to explode and like look up once when the Eater article came out. So when the Eater article came out, it was 100% like positive, and then after that, it was like influencers started to come in, the news media started to come in. So yeah, that's where it all started. It taught me a lot in terms of like to be really. It taught me integrity. It taught me to be tough at certain times. Like basically, like if you open up a restaurant and stay open in the midst of COVID, not I don't out of nothing not, not nothing nothing else would faze me at this point.
And it's as good a guy as you are, I'm sure it has something to do with the food as well that you serve there. You serve some pretty special food. I was just watching with my wife and son here the Epicurious videos that you did making adobo, which is mouth watering for absolutely. And this dish was so fascinating, and it made me want to kind of immediately book more time in the restaurant to come back. But it seems like such a personal dish. And the experience that I had in your restaurant was the same kind of a thing. So, I really feel like there's something there that resonates with people on that level that you just don't get at a lot of other restaurants. So what is it about Filipino food and cuisine and some of these specific dishes that make it such a personal thing?
So basically, I think at this point, I'll take it from the words of Andrew Zimmern. He said, like, the only Asian food that's undiscovered is Filipino food, basically. It's basically a blank canvas. Like you basically a blank canvas, like where you can actually, it basically have a fresh start. So like it's only it's the only way to really introduce Filipino food correctly is to execute it properly, and to make people understand what it really is all about. Because going back probably like the past before we opened, like about even before, like probably like the past 10, 12 years, the spectrum of Filipino food in the city, at least, or in New York at least, was only two things. It was the high-end Filipino food, which is like the fusion stuff, the chef-topped Filipino food, and the other end of the spectrum was the Filipino food that was only for Filipinos that non-Filipinos couldn't understand it or appreciate. So it was really nothing in the middle. So we tried to fill that void, where the food was more approachable. That was why initially we started off at in like like to go like paper bowls, so it could be it so it's affordable, it's approachable, and it's portable.
Okay.
So that's why we started that. But now, but ever since COVID happened, we had to adapt, because the because ever since COVID happened, people did not go out as much anymore. So there was no foot traffic going around. So it was, and like to survive in just delivery platforms is not enough. So we had to adapt. So now was the so for a while we were a hybrid restaurant. No, so that's that was the thing for us in introducing Filipino food to the public.
It's the dishes too seem like they have
Nice Daytona.
oh, thank you. Yeah, that reminds me, we didn't do a wrist check. That's how, because I want to ask you about this adobo food, because there's a few things that came to mind. But what are you wearing
Right
today,
now,
Anton, Chef? Yeah.
I have this a newly purchased 5512 from
Oh,
19
beautiful.
5512 from 1968, I believe. Yeah, 1968. This is not the neat font style. It's the one after that.
Yeah.
But if it seems to be an unpolished case. You see all the chambers in there.
Yeah.
Great patina. But what's amazing about this watch, which I just purchased recently and slapped on this, is the really rare long five kissing 40 insert, which
Yes.
alone, yes, which alone we all know how much that costs on its on it by itself.
I love the 52x12. I'm a huge fan of that reference. It's one of the references responsible for like really pulling me deep into watches ages ago. So congratulations
Thank you, thank you,
on the new
thank you.
pickup. So yeah, I'm wearing the 126500 Daytona.
Ceramic.
Yep, the new ceramic. Somebody had brought it up in discussion, and measurements got involved. So I got mine out to take a specific measurement, and then I just threw it on for the rest of the day. So it's a nice companion. That I would love to
Nice.
have one from the 60s or 70s,
Yeah.
but the ship might
No one's.
have sailed. So
And
so we'll see.
we're all working towards that price point.
Yeah,
It's good to have one of those in the arsenal.
Exactly. I know you're a sub guy. You've had a few go through, and we'll get into that. While we were on this adobo subject, as I was watching that, and you kind of said, it really kind of boils down to a few, like, it's not that complicated. It's really just kind of
It's
these few
not.
things,
It's
and then
really
you can
not.
kind of take it in all these other directions that you want.
Exactly.
And it kind of reminded me of, I've been reading this book about cocktails and really kind of understanding the fundamentals. And then when you kind of understand the building blocks of how they work, you can really take it into like any of these
Pretty
directions,
much. So,
which makes it kind of fun for me.
yes.
So is that how adobo is for you and how it can kind of
Well,
really.
I would okay. You're right. So I would say it in a more general note that cooking is like that in general. It's not like they say cooking is an art. Yes and no. Because a true artist does not need the fundamentals. A true artist like Michelangelo or whatever, like all the like a true painter or whatever, it comes natural. They just paint. They don't need the fundamentals. Nothing. In cooking and like making adobo, there's rules to that. Those once you set down those fundamentals, those that foundation, then you can play around. Then you can get creative. That's
Yeah.
those that's the thing about cooking. That's the thing about adobo. The base fundamental of adobo is three things: it's soy sauce, vinegar, and garlic. That's all it is. The very, very first adobo actually did not have soy sauce. The very first adobo is actually just garlic and vinegar.
Okay.
So it's pork, garlic, and vinegar. That's it.
And that's
So
it.
the introduction of soy sauce came in when the Chinese came to the Philippines centuries ago. That's
Sure,
when that's
sure.
when that's when but like the but the so that well that became the traditional adobo. That became the traditional adobo of like of the whole of the Philippines. It's soy sauce, garlic, and vinegar. And then some people throw in coconut milk, some people throw in like lemongrass in there, some people throw in mushrooms, or what some people throw in star anise, some people even throw in I'll cook for you guys this one day. It's called humbap. Which is a version of adobo, but it has mushrooms, the fermented black beans, star anise, and pineapple.
Oh, wow.
It totally changes the whole dish. It's amazing.
I
And
love that.
my adobo is actually pork belly. The humbat, basically the other version of adobo, that the version of humbat is actually from the south of the Philippines. That other version of adobo is actually they use the braised pork hock, which is even more succulent.
Okay. Braised pork hock. Okay. Yeah, it looked fascinating and I love that it's something that's seemingly basic, but it really can be what you make of it. And to me, like I feel like I mentioned the cocktails, and I think watches even in the same sense. It's not the watch that makes you interesting; it's you that makes the watch interesting, right? Because I know
I
people
like
come
that.
down on people that have like Submariners or whatever basic watch. I'm like, well, who cares? Like, what are you doing with it? And it's not like the watch that's making you. It's your making it. So, I've always kind of identified, and I always tell people like a watch is what you make of it. Like if you're gonna
Exactly,
call a
exactly. It
Rolex
doesn't
a
have,
status symbol,
you
like
don't
it's not that to
need,
everybody.
you don't have to spend $30,000 or $40,000. I have some pieces in my, and I have some pieces where like they're like $700 or like $400, and they hit the same when I'm wearing it,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's the beauty of collecting. It can be what you make of it and what you want it to be, which I really love. So how so you've been in the food scene and the cooking scene. I'm sure that like the watch industry over the past 10 years has really changed a lot, and the enthusiast scene has changed a lot, that the food scene in New York has changed quite a bit in that time. Like how have these two things kind of come together for you? Like how did you first get into watches, and then to the point of like, oh, like while I'm cooking and running my restaurant, this is just a part of me and how I operate.
Obviously, to be honest, as I said in the Hodinkee article, watches played a huge role for me because I when I was a cook, I had like probably undiagnosed ADD, so like I forget things right away,
Sure.
so when I put something in the oven, as soon as I turn around, I've forgotten about it.
Yeah.
So I bought it. I bought it. That's why when I was in the kitchen, I wear a G-Shock. I wear something that has a timer, or something like a chronograph or something, So when I went, so what do you call this? When I throw something in the oven or put the turn the stove up to cook something, I put a timer on. So it reminds me, and it sort of reminds me, okay, I got something cooking, So that's how watches played in a role in the kitchen. But in terms of like loving watches and like loving what I do, I think the reason why I love watches is because I love details. When you're cooking, the details matter.
Yeah.
When you're collecting watches, details matter. So I like I'm a freak for like for detail and attention to detail.
So as I mentioned earlier, we met a couple weeks back in your restaurant with a dinner with a few other watch collectors here in New York. How did you get involved in this scene with these types of people?
So Jane also came out of in Hodinkee, the article of Hodinkee. So we came out of 4+1. I came out of 4+1. It was nice. It was nice enough for her to approach me because we were I was eating we were we, I was eating in a Hamburger America, and then I was minding my own business, and she comes up, hey, like. I know you. This is you. I was like, oh, hi. It's like, okay. So after that, oh, this is basically like and I follow Watch Meow, like I mean, also like, oh, this guy. I was like, oh shit, like So and then I put two together. It's like, okay, this is like, and then they reached out, like, nice to meet you. Well, I just, you know what, and then I blurted out to them, why don't we do like get together in the restaurant? Bring all the watch guys, like you guys, and I'll serve you an awesome meal, and we can talk watches. That putting put you know like I would I am there's nothing that I love more to do to cook and talk watches. That's
Sure.
a perfect day for me. That's a perfect day for me, and especially meeting you guys, meeting you Blake, and like everybody else who are so cool, who are so unassuming, but like and like just like just have this passion for these things, like I appreciate that kind of people. Yeah, and I
Yeah,
appreciate you guys coming by.
It's one of those things you come for the watches, but you stay for the people, ultimately. And there's such a great community around this stuff at the end of the day. So I love hearing that. And shout out to Jane. This is Just Jane CT
Thank
on Instagram. We'll
you,
leave a link to her
Jay.
profile. Yeah, hi Jane. We'll leave a link. She's
Hi,
also the
Jane.
one that encouraged me to
We'll
reach
see.
out
We'll
to you.
see on Gothenburger Social in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. She's the one that told me, like, you should have him on the podcast. He's he's great to talk to. So
Nice.
so we love her. And these guys can be a bad influence sometimes because you see some pretty incredible watches that come in. So
I see that. I foresee that. Like, I'm gonna be like, oh shit, like, that's a really nice watch. So when I put it on your Zenith, I was like, well, as soon as I got home, man, I just bought a fucking 5.5/5.2, but I like
it's a cool watch, right?
that Zenith.
And that's the kind of crowd that I like, kind of bringing a watch that doesn't have to be the most expensive or the most this or that, but it's interesting, and it kind of like gives some
It is.
insight into like how you think about watches.
And I think just in general, like Zenith as a brand is probably the most underrated brand for me out there. In terms of, like, I want to say the most underrated is, like, there's so much, like, out of all the watch brands, I think it has the highest value for the price point. That's why for me, like, I don't even know why I haven't bought a Zenith yet. Maybe I probably will,
You've been looking for the right one, right? You've been waiting for that
exactly
right one
yeah
so
exactly
long.
and we all know, it's when we're buying watches, it's all about timing too.
Yeah.
Is it the right one there? It's like, at this point, this is the right one to buy. Is there something better? Should I wait for this? It's all about timing.
So when you think about watches that you like or watches that you're going to buy, do you have a certain type or style that you kind of stick to, or is it kind of all
I
over the
always
map?
well so I have like I have like just my rule my my, my I have, because before I had like 30 or 35 watches, I had so I'm like, but I only reach for 3 or 4 or 5 watches out of that 30. So my rule of thumb is like, okay, I'm gonna throw away this box that other, because I had 2 cases, right? So they're like a 12, a 12, a 12, and another one. So I set aside those 2 boxes. All right, I'm gonna keep it down to 12, right? So my rule of thumb is like, when I buy watches, like, I have other watches that'll keep. Then I have like 2 or 3 watches that I'll use in for, like, with sale. I want something that are trade in or something, So like, but I always keep myself. I like sport watches. I like sports watches. Also because I went to, so I like subs is because I can actually stop. And it's not that I'm not saying that I'm going to use it in the kitchen, because I'm not going to fucking use it in the kitchen. But
Sure.
if I had to, I can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I like sports. I like sports watches. I like this. I like mostly vintage. I do have some modern pieces, but mostly vintage. I like the sports line of Rolex, obviously. I love Tudors. I love Tudors. The vintage Tudors. I love the Black Bay 54. I love. What else? In terms of like the non-sports watches, I think my top brand for non-sports watches, for, like, it's Universal Geneve.
Oh,
That's that's I mean, I've been dying to have a Nina,
The Nina
that's
Rindt
like,
chronograph,
I love those, man. Like,
yeah, they're stunning. They're, and now, of course, the Universal
but
Geneve is huge.
I just can't get myself around it, where, like, okay, I'm paying a price of like maybe a really, really nice, GMT, like 1675 GMT, or a really nice 5.5/1.2, but I can't get it wet. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? So I just can't wrap my head around
Yeah.
that.
Look, there's a lot of watches that I really like. And then when I think about if I owned it, would I wear it or would I use it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, which
And
one?
then
Give
I'm
me an
like,
example. Which one? Like what?
like a Lange 1815 chronograph or something. Like, I adore the watch, of course, but I have a feeling it would sit in my watch box a lot. Or even like the Universal Geneve. It's a great example. So and I think it really kind of comes down to like, well, am I going to use this and am I going to wear it? And then the
Yes,
rest,
exactly.
it's just fine to like appreciate and enjoy, from the sidelines when other people. And Universal Geneve was just, of course, kind of reacquired by by
Yeah, Brightland. Yeah,
Breitling ownership group. So I think
I hope they do. I hope and pray they do a good job, and that they don't veer away from what it was. You
I
know, the
know, I know.
I don't want to see. I don't want to see a 44, 48 millimeter Universal Geneva. Please
I know. I fingers
don't.
crossed there, and I'm cautiously optimistic there. And that's one of my favorite like kind of vintage brands. So to see them like potentially making a comeback is just awesome, and people being able to experience them as a new watch and not have to be worried about, oh, this is a fragile kind of old thing. You know,
Right.
yeah, I'm excited about that. So the Submariner, it seems to be like a watch that resonates with you quite a bit.
Yes.
Do you remember the
Yes.
first, like, what was the first sub that got you, oh, like, I like this?
Oh my God, the very, very first sub that
Like, was it an
okay.
old one or a
I'm
new
saying
one?
no. Let's talk subs or divers, okay? Because
Oh,
the very
divers in
first sub
general.
that
Okay,
I
perfect. Yeah.
The very first sub that I bought was a 276 1000.
Yeah.
The non Mercedes Sandu. Beautiful watch, completed box papers. There was no cracking on, because normally those the Mercedes the non Mercedes Sandu, the lollipops, they crack, right?
Yep.
That's why they changed the Mercedes Sandu. So there was no cracking. It was freaking a beautiful piece of horology. But that was actually the real sub that I first owned. But the very, very first watch that I had, which is a very interesting story, was a Seamaster 300 CCK 2913.
Okay, excellent.
I bought it in 2002 for $300.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I sold it for 600. And that watch now is, you know, the proper the that watch now is about 30 grand.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
Yeah.
know, so that was my very, very first dive watch, and like I think because of that watch, that was the one that really, you know, opened the gateway for me for divers, you know,
Yeah.
for dive watches. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great watch to do
Yeah.
that with I'm a big Seamaster 300 fan. I have a first gen titanium myself. It's just an utterly charming watch.
Yes.
But there's something about the sub too that always kind of drew me in the 5512 especially. I know people like the
Ooh.
two lines of text with the
I don't.
5513s,
I
but
like. Yeah,
I like the full
but like,
dial.
I like the full dial, man. Like, I mean, it's okay. I love 5513s. I like 5513s. You know, like the
Yeah.
thing is, like, you know, like I've had so many already, and like I have so many. I've so many in the past already. Where I'm like, it's actually not. It's easy to get. They're not really that special. You know what I mean? But you know, like, but the two line, the two line, the four line 5512s, especially this first generation of mad dials, I think it is more special. The only time I'm probably gonna trade is I'm probably gonna have the only time I'm gonna trade this for another 5512, if it's a maxi, you
Ah,
know.
okay.
Yeah,
So,
so that's.
have you owned any modern subs, or is it all just been through the vintage?
Modern subs. No.
Nothing.
No, I haven't. I haven't. I
Okay.
haven't. Yeah. I haven't. It's all been vintage. I've gone through I've gone through most of the, you know, the great Tudor references 7016 slash zero. I've had two of those. I had a snowflake. Beautiful snowflake coming from got him from Chris Shiny Happy Objects. Shout out to him, dude. Thanks for all your great, you know, pieces. I had that. I had a beautiful 7928, which military provenance, that I got from Skip. That was probably one of the, that was a top tutor that I've got. Two 76 100s, and yeah. So that's I've gone through all that, and then after that, multiple 5513s. This is actually my first 5512. Yeah,
And in a
and
1680, I
yeah.
saw
Oh
on the
yeah, I had like three 1680s. Yeah, I had like three 1680s. I had like I
all
had three
whites,
1680s.
1680 whites.
So I had a Mark One, a Mark Two, all you know, a white 1680s. Yeah,
Okay, okay.
I think for me, this is the white 1680. It's like, That's an underrated watch too, man. It's basically a red sub that's not red. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's a it's
well, yeah, and I think there's
and you're paying like half the price. You know what
yeah,
I
you're
mean?
paying like
For
half the price of, you know, for slightly less paint on the dial,
yes,
of course.
exactly.
So, did you have the I noticed in the picture of yours there was no Cyclops on the crystal. Did you have that done or
Yes.
did you buy it like that?
So no, I had it was it had a six it had a Cyclops on, and then that watch that I bought wasn't actually keeping time. The reason why it wasn't keeping time was because it was unopened ever since. It was had never been serviced. Okay, so like for me, it was like, oh, that's actually a plus for me. It's like it's never been opened. So I had a service, and I just like you know the clean look. I kind of don't like so the Cyclops look because it makes it like it throws me off a little. You know the dimension. It throws out the dimension of the watch. So I had a Trudon put in. So like it actually when the true and actually for me the Trudon is like you know they're great. They're great. So like had Trudon put in. And then when they put that in, I just love the watch even more because you can actually see the whole, you know, all of the patina on the dial.
Have you ever considered a sea dweller of the same era?
Yeah, well, so my first very my I had my first sea dweller ever was a 666, from 1984. It wasn't the mad dial, but it had really really great patina, unpolished case, beautiful beautiful watch. It looked, to be honest with you. It looked like a NOS watch. It looked like a new old stock, you know. Great, great watch. Got that from Linden, Oliver and Clark. And then I was choosing between this or a 1665 for the right price. But I'm like, man, that's a tough choice, bro.
That is
That's
tough.
a tough choice, bro. I had to go for the 551 too, man, because I had to do it. I had to do it because
You
it's just
hadn't
like
had one. I bet that you
man.
will. I bet you'll have a sea dweller at some point in your
Oh
future.
yeah, give me a couple of months.
A couple months, get the old double red in there. Why have one line of red text when you can have two lines of red text? On this. That's
couple of months.
awesome. So, what do you mentioned your love of Tudor and your kind of love of the older stuff. Do you like what modern Tudor is doing? That it seems kind of like in the same vein of like
Not
what
all of them,
Rolex was
man.
once
Not all of
trying
them. Not all of them. I love them. I love the Blagos 39. I love the black. I've had like three or four Blackbeard 58s because I love them.
to.
I've had. I don't. I've been one. I'm on the verge of getting a Blackbeard 50. The Blackbeard 54. But like you know, like some of the watches like the during the Blackbeard line, they're aesthetically beautiful. But when it sits on the wrist, man, it's like you're wearing. It's like it literally looks like this, it looks like
Yeah, it's
that.
a
You
little
know,
tough.
it's all thick. So I'm like, it's like I don't. That's why I try not. I try not to get watches that are above 13 millimeters in thickness. It just doesn't look right. It just this is like it's it doesn't look right.
No, I feel you there. I feel like some people, you know, it's tough to get, you can get caught up in the numbers easily, but I think the overall wearability is what matters like the most. And some of them they get a little tricky because they don't do much to hide the thickness, which I think is
Yes,
it's
they
just kind
don't,
of
man. They're...
all vertical instead of
Yeah.
kind of like having a rounded off case back and hiding a
Correct,
little bit of it
correct. Or
somewhere.
like
So
just round it off a little bit. It's like basically a block, like the big block, you know, basically.
yeah.
So we all know the original Monte Carlo, right? That original
Yeah.
Monte Carlo is a phenomenal watch. But
Yeah.
it came out with the Heritage line, right? The Monte Carlo Heritage line. Dude, it was basically like having a really thick, like, you know, beefy watch on your hand, which didn't resonate with me.
I feel like they came out with that 5 years too early. And if they
Yeah.
had held on, and I love that design because it's a quintessential
Yeah, it's a
original
beautiful
Tudor
design,
design.
man.
It's gorgeous.
Exactly.
And I'm crossing my fingers that that comes back in some way, shape, or
I
form.
hope and pray. I hope and pray that comes back. And like, I would love a 39 millimeter version of that, and like
Oh,
thinner version of that.
yes.
That would be perfect.
That would be a hot ticket. So what
Yeah.
is there any like any watch that Rolex could come out with today that would make you like, oh, I'm gonna need
That's
that?
a question. That's a really good question. Modern watches. Batman's no, not GMT's no, not really. The only thing that I would wear now is the one that's on your hand.
The Daytona.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's the
It's
only
a
thing I would wear now.
great.
Yeah, black.
And
Give me a black one. Give me a black one. And give me all the colors. Just don't give me those leopard ones.
just know the leopard ones are. All right. Well, any Rolex ADs listening, get our man here a black tie, old Daytona. I love it. Anton, I want to be conscious of your time here, but what do you got? What else you got cooking? What's on the radar? What are you planning? What's in the cards for tradition moving ahead?
Moving ahead, right now, working on a project. It's not going to be Asian. Sorry, it's not going to be Filipino. It's going to be Asian.
Okay.
It's going to be a full-on restaurant, bar, everything, all of that. But it's going to be Asian food because, to be honest with you, that's actually the food that I cook. You
Sure.
know, I don't that's actually my forte, like a Southeast Asian cuisine is my forte.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm gonna think. That's gonna be in the cards. No, you know, it's not set in stone yet, but we're working on it.
Okay. Well, I look forward to that. And where can people go to stay up to date with what you're doing or and go see more of you?
I mean, I don't have a website. Just go to, you know, just go to the tradition NYC Instagram page. You know, I'm there all the time. You know, we currently update those with what we're doing in the restaurant. And then if you have any questions about watches or like vintage watches or anything that you want to buy in terms of like vintage Rolexes, and or questions, reach out to me.
All right, I love it. I love it. I'm
Yeah.
gonna bring my family by sometime. My son is a big fan of
Please.
spicy food,
Oh
and I
man.
caught wind that you make some spicy dishes
Oh
there.
yeah, I love it. Like in most of the dishes, like 99% of the dishes that I make, there's always a hint of chili.
Okay.
Always in a chili. There's always some sort of chili in there. Yeah,
Well,
so I love spicy.
maybe I'll bring him to
Wait,
you.
your kid likes spicy food?
He loves it. He's
How old is he?
11. He's 11 years old,
Wow,
and we
that's.
got him for his favorite Christmas present this year was getting the whole Hot Ones, all 10 of the Hot Ones sauces, and then
Hot sauces?
we got wings and we did the whole thing. Then we
Wow,
did like
that's so interesting.
the last dab or whatever was the final one,
What?
and we had a great time. And he loved it. So now we're like it's changed my because now I'm putting like hot sauce on like all the food that I eat, and I love it. I
Oh
love it.
my
It's
God, that's
like
so
changed how I
interesting. That's
eat.
so funny, dude. That's amazing.
But you could, I bet you could humble him with one of the hot dishes at.
Okay, I got you. I got you. I got you. Yeah, no worries.
We'll set it up.
Yeah.
Anton, it's just been
Yeah.
a huge pleasure talking to you, man. Thank you so much
Blake,
for your
thank you
time.
so much. Appreciate you, man. Like, thank you. It was good talking to you. Looking forward to hanging out with you more in the future, talking about watches, talking about food, everything. Man, appreciate it.
Absolutely. We will have links to everything that we've talked about, to all the references and watches that we've talked about down below. So keep an eye out for that. And I'll also leave a link to your restaurant and your social media as well. That'll do it for this week's episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next time, take care.